The excellent reporter John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox, joins us right now. Get an update on the baseball situation. John, Joe, and Evan, how are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
Joe, Evan, thanks so much. Doing great. Hope you and your families are doing well, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. So in this moment, May 13th, 4 o'clock, where do we stand on baseball's negotiations?
We are still early, I believe, in the process of where the negotiations stand. Of course, we know there was the initial proposal yesterday, really the initial conversation between MLB and the union that was largely aimed at the health and safety dynamics, according to reports, much more so than the economic issues, which we believe will be a bit more contentious as the process moves on. But I think in general, guys, I am still optimistic that we're going to see baseball this year. Certainly from a standpoint of just the agreement on the labor relations, I realize there were very, very real issues in front of MLB and the Players Association to be dealt with, but both sides simply have so much to gain, frankly, by being among the first sports to be back on the field and to help the country during this time of need. And I think also on the flip side, there's a lot to be lost if they don't do that, provided, of course, that there is enough public health assurance that it's safe to do so. So I am an optimist on this. I expect there will certainly be plenty of back and forth over the next couple of weeks, but the fact that there is time to go through this and work through these things before spring training would resume next month also gives me a lot of confidence.
You know, they just can't let money excuse me, they just can't let money get in the way of this. I mean, it's just not a good look at all when they talk about the, you know, revenue sharing and how the players don't want it. I mean, and I'm not taking a side either way because, you know, both of them, it's billionaires and millionaires. Money cannot get in the way of this. It just looks terrible.
Well, there are obviously there's some real issues to work through, as is always the case when there's any sort of bargaining, and that's where I am willing to give obviously both sides here a chance to work through them and sort of express their point of view as it relates to the economic foundation of the game. But I think one point that has to be made very clearly is this: that you think about professional sports in North America, mm-hmm. MLB, as we speak today, is still the only major pro league in our country that does not have a salary cap.
Right.
And
correct.
I think it's important to give the MLB owners credit for that. I have covered the sport for a decade and a half, and I cannot recall any time ever being at a press conference around the time that a basic agreement was being negotiated and having anybody on the owner's side saying, listen, here are the reasons why we need a salary cap. That has not happened. And I think it's important to realize that there is a lot of credit that belongs to the
owners. But don't you, John,
for that reason.
Don't you think a lot of that is they are afraid about what happened in 94? I mean,
they want a salary cap.
The main reason, for the explosion of 94 was the cap. And I think they have almost, and I guess I give them credit for being smart, that they realize if they ever bring up that, that's like the third rail with the players, and it'll just go nowhere because we saw the damage that it caused in 94-95.
Correct. And I think also, guys, as you consider what could happen as a result of these negotiations, and I understand that the players have some reservations about linking directly revenues to the amount of money they get paid. I understand that. But I see no evidence here that this is part of any sort of long-term view to change the economic structure of baseball for 2025 or for 2027. Mm-hmm. This is about getting the sport back on the field this year, if it's safe to do so. And if you do things the right way, Joe and Evan, I really believe this strongly, if baseball does things the right way, and I believe they want to, that the money to be made revenue-wise, the day to think about that is going to be 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years down the line, when the American public remembers how you represented the country, how you came mm-hmm. back, how you came together, and that's where the connection is built now for what I believe will be a very prosperous future down the line.
What scares me is that I think most players are going to want to play. If not for love of the game, they want to get paid. Are there owners that economically prefer not to play, where they say, you know what, I don't want to have to pay these guys. I don't want to play baseball. We're better off. We'll lose less money by not playing than by playing and having to pay a lot of these salaries. Are there owners that feel that way, John?
I really don't think so, and here's why. It's not simply about the cost-benefit for 2020 on the books. It's about the long-term viability and health of the business. And that a lot of that comes into content creation, advanced media, television networks, all of those silos, those buckets of revenue, depend on there being a product on the field. So there is a very narrow cost of doing business for this year, of just having the games. But there's also the cultural connection that will be wrapped up in the decisions that we all make. Every American right now is thinking about, what do I need in my life? As I'm getting back and thinking about what the future will look like, what aspects do I need to have back in my life right away? And what are the things that are sort of off there in the distance? If baseball is off there in the distance to too many people, it's going to affect the way the product is viewed for the next generation. And conversely, if you're there and if you're present and if you present your product in a very creative way and a very empathetic and thoughtful way, people are going to be drawn to that for a very long time. And one of the best things baseball has is that it's played every day. What do we need right now? We need our routines. We want our sports back and our cultural connection back. And baseball does that better than any other sport in our country.
All right, so let's say everything goes the way they want. Let's say 4th of July is opening day. What are we looking at? We're not looking at any people in the stands. First of all, where are the games? I mean, I can't believe that you're going to see games in New York on the 4th of July if the season opens. How about that?
Well, it's a very fair question, and I think the first answer is that we don't know yet. It's 6 weeks from now, and you think about 6 weeks ago even, we were in a very different place around the 1st of April than we are right now in our country. It was a very different situation. I expect it to continue evolving, which is why as the plans are rolled out about the return to play and what the schedule looks like, it's important for the agreement to have hinges within it. And by that I mean if city X, Y, or Z is not safe to play in right now, you move to either an alternate location somewhere close to it, or down to Florida, down to Arizona, other neutral site. There has to be an allocation made for different secondary and tertiary options. Because when you look at what a lot of the health experts have said in the last couple months, there's probably going to be a second spike at some point in time in the fall. And when that happens, if and when that happens, we're going to have to be creative and move the games around. So to your point, the fact that if you think about the 4th of July and based on whatever the rate of transmission is in New York at that point in time, if you cannot play in New York, what that means to me is you cannot play in New York. You have to play those games with the Yankees and Mets somewhere else. But that alone should not necessarily scuttle the entire plan to play baseball this year.
Talking to John Morosi, baseball's hopeful plan to get back to playing hopefully soon. We've heard the number 82 for 82 games. Is that something that's put out there as a negotiation where maybe the players are going to want more games so they could bring in more money? Or do you see 82 being the number that eventually we get as far as regular season games are concerned?
I think 82 becomes the number because of this reality that we just talked about a moment ago. If we believe that there's a chance, that there's a pretty good chance of having an increase in cases in the fall concurrent with flu season, that you want to have your season wrapped up by the early part of November. That while conceptually the possibility was mentioned, maybe we could see baseball around Thanksgiving at a neutral site in Texas or California or Florida, Arizona, that conceptually might make some sense. But if we're experiencing something by then that was worse than what we saw in March and April, then I'm not sure how tenable that idea is. So it's not as though it's an open runway here, but it's more of a window. I think we've got a window to play based on what a lot of the modeling suggests. And so you play a 3-month regular season, give or take, and then a 4 or 5 week playoff with additional teams involved, of course, as we've seen reported. Joel Sherman has reported on that for a while at the Post. And so you have 7 teams in each league involved. The playoffs maybe take a week longer than they normally would, maybe a few days. But going deep into November, I simply think that plan is a bit too perilous.
All right. Now, as far as the how it would be set up, the schedule, if you will, or the travel part of it, so it would be only teams playing within their own division and maybe the opposite division in the other league, right? Is that basically how it would go down?
Yes, and that is for a couple reasons. I think number one, it's obviously less expensive to travel closer. We don't know what travel around the U.S. will look like this summer, candidly. I think that those who have flown would probably testify to that. And I also think that if you are keeping your geography a little tighter, then if you do have to relocate a game, You're not trying to say, okay, the Yankees are due to play the Angels here. How do we find a spot, a neutral site where they can play? It's much different if it's the Yankees and the Orioles or the Yankees and the Nationals, for example. So
right.
I think it's much easier logistically. That also, to me, is part of the reason why the Universal DH makes a lot of sense right now. Standardize it for this season especially, and maybe you look at it again in the future. But that way it's a fairer, easier, simpler competition with expanded rosters. It's all aimed at giving yourself more flexibility. If you have more players in the roster, the distance to travel is shorter. You're just not asking a lot of a smaller group of people. It's just you're building yourself in some flexibility. I think that's a great way to do it. And I also think, guys, as you look ahead to the next 10 years, I really believe that if things go well, and again, we're still just trying to get from Wednesday to Thursday, but when you think about the game overall, proximity and competition, I think that we may see by the latter part of this decade the standardization of the DH across baseball and divisions that are tighter geographically with, for example, the Yankees and Mets in the same one.
Mm. Yeah, no, I fear that. I mean, obviously,
I don't love that at all.
No, I'm against it, but that is something that I fear. I've assumed the DH is definitely coming.
Well, that's different.
And the geographic realignment has always been a fear in my mind that that would come. But let me start with this DH thing. It's very tough to take something out of the bottle and then put it back in. Right. So once they give us the universal DH this season, which I understand, I actually get it as pro NL, letting the pitcher hit as I am for 1 year under these circumstances, completely understand it. Is there any way they could put the glue back in the bottle? Once you give the players the taste of a universal DH, isn't that going to be something where they say, yeah, we're never going back to the pitcher hitting again?
Well, it's a great question, and I think the answer is it would be difficult to change it back for 2021, especially if it then becomes a matter of bargaining for the next CBA. And that's where there are so many significant decisions that have to be made by baseball in a very narrow period of time. Even setting aside the current crisis, of course, the current CBA is up at the end of 2021. The DH, to me, was already going to be something that was discussed at that point in time. So if MLB and the union are able to make an agreement now and discuss things comprehensively, it would not surprise me if a lot of these other issues that seem to be so significant are either dealt with all at the same time with an agreement or are simply discussed at a level that if they pick up the conversations in a quote-unquote normal manner in a year or 16 months from now, that the agreement on those things would be a lot faster. And in general, I would tell you, Joe and Evan, that the union has been pro-universal DH, generally speaking, because the DH job is a high-paying job. And it's a good-paying job as opposed to whatever the seventh relief pitcher on the roster is. It's, generally speaking, a more higher stature, higher revenue position.
So,
and so that's a better thing economically for the union.
Well, who has been – because I sometimes I feel like I'm on this island by myself as wanting the pitcher to remain hitting in the National League. Are there proponents in baseball for keeping the rules separate? Is it just a handful of National League owners? Who is it, from what you hear, that actually is resistant to the universal DH, if there is anybody?
Right. Well, that's another great question, because you don't really hear, outside of the more traditional perspective about the game being played and the cultural connection that people have with National League Baseball. I love NL baseball. I grew up in an AL state in Michigan, but I also love doing National League games. I think it's a really cool aspect and way to watch the game. But I think, like so many things right now in the game, that a lot of the traditions and tenets of the sport are changing. I mean, we're seeing now a three batter minimum for a relief pitcher, which, to me, you think about the game, that feels almost like a more radical change than the DH to me, because that affects strategy in every single game and every single move. Whereas the DH, I think it's certainly a big part of baseball, but it just something feels less obtrusive to the game itself than having a three batter minimum for a player, which affects how you're managing the game there. So it's a great question. I don't think there's a huge vocal majority by any means of people in the sport that want the DH rule to be separate. I actually think there's probably a strong support for it to change, and I believe that as a consequence of all these conversations happening right now in our sport, that it probably will change, if not now, in the next couple of years.
All right, how about the playoff, the expansion of the playoffs? How many playoff teams do you think there will be? If the season goes off the way they want it, how many teams in the playoffs?
I think we're going to see seven in each league, and that was reported first by Joel Sherman as well about just the overall conversation about the expanded playoffs. And even if you do that, guys, you're still having a more selective playoff situation than what you see in the NBA and the NHL. Part of it is you protect that top seed, and then the next six teams will play in the first round, like a qualifying round, to then begin the division series in the next round. I like it. It's exciting. It will, I think, raise level of competition, where if you're a 500 team, you're going to have many more reasons to go for it. You're going to have more teams, like in the last offseason, the White Sox and the Reds, that really made some moves to get themselves on the radar screen. I like that a lot. But remember this. That top seed, we have seen this happen before in the current structure of the division series and the wild card game. That top seed, often by sitting down for 3 days, is sometimes at a disadvantage. They really are. And you would never choose to be one of the six teams that has to play in the first round. I get it. But once you're through, you're in rhythm when you're the underdog team, and I've seen it so many times, including, oh, by the way, the current World Series champions upsetting the Dodgers. Sometimes it actually works out quite well when you're the wild card.
That's why, if you're going to give me seven playoff teams, how about the three division winners automatically go to the real playoffs, and you let the four wild card teams battle it out, whether it's just a winner-take-all game or best of three, so that you continue to allow the divisions to matter. You know, winning the division now over the last 7 years matters again, because you're right into that best of five as opposed to having to play a winner-take-all wild card game. Is that a possibility, or is that enough? Is that not enough added revenue for the owners and players?
Well, that's a key point. I think that part of the playoff structure is to protect the proposal, at least, of the seven teams, with the six teams having to play that initial series. Part of it is to protect and really put on a pedestal that number one seed. The other part is, you're right, the revenue. And right now, the sport needs more October revenue than ever before. And it's going to have to be a big part of the overall pie. So I think that while your suggestion has a lot of merit, I think that the overriding consideration will be that of revenue, and I think we will see a pretty robust move, I think, by both players and owners to that seven team structure with six teams playing in the first round, because it certainly is a good carrot for the middle tier teams to compete a little bit more at the trade deadline, for example, but also it's more revenue, and we are candidly at a spot where the additional revenue is going to matter a ton.
So you think we'll see baseball, let's say by July 4th, you think we will see a season?
Whether it's July 4, sometime during July, I really believe, guys, that we're going to see it. But for it to work, it certainly is going to be a major effort by the players and the league, but also all citizens. We all have a role to play here in terms of heeding the advice of the public health officials, because the lower the infection transmission rate is in our communities, the better chance we have to have our sports. That is exactly where we're at right now. And I certainly hear it from my wife, who's a doctor all the time. We have to follow the guidance of the medical folks, and the better we do at that, the better chance we have to have baseball back this summer.
John, we appreciate it. Stay safe. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, John.
Thanks so much, Joe and Evan. Look forward to the next conversation. Thanks for all you do.
You got it, man. John Morosi, MLB and Fox, on the latest with baseball.